This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Thank you for downloading this edition of The Book That Changed Me. In this programme, entrepreneur Luke Johnson talks about The Magic of Thinking Big by David J. Schwartz.
I first read The Magic of Thinking Big by David J. Schwartz in about 1985. I had moved to London a couple of years earlier after graduating from Oxford University. At the time, I was working as a stockbroking analyst in the city. It was an interesting job. I got to meet the bosses of big companies and was learning how to understand their accounts, but I was still frustrated. During my student days, I spent most of my time not studying for my degree in physiology, but running my own business with a partner, a series of one-night clubs and a mobile discotheque. I loved it. However, a few years later, I was beginning to feel trapped as an employee in a big bank. The days of being a carefree student entrepreneur seemed a lifetime away. I yearned for the freedom and independence of being my own boss, but lacked the courage to make the leap. I spent lots of my time at weekends in bookshops on the Charing Cross Road and discovered the publishing genre called self-help. Although it might be argued the category was invented by the English author Samuel Smiles in 1859 with his book Self-Help, most of the best examples are by Americans, and The Magic of Thinking Big was a modern classic of the type. First published in 1959, it has been continuously in print ever since and sold millions of copies in total. There is something in American culture, in their psyche, that believes profoundly in the concept of self-improvement, the idea of a better future, of manifest destiny, a sense of reinvention, of limitless possibilities. And for me, The Magic of Thinking Big expressed that spirit of practical optimism and potential better than anything else I had read. Now, before I go much further, I should explain. This book is not great literature. Indeed, it is popular psychology at its most obvious. But that is partly why I enjoyed it. I come from a family of intellectuals. My father is an historian who has written over 50 serious books. My mother studied English at Oxford. And our house when I was growing up was full of authors like Kingsley Amis and playwrights like Tom Stoppard, which was wonderful. But there were never any entrepreneurs, and I wanted to be one of them. I think part of the reason why I liked the book so much was that I was in love with America. I went there a lot from the age of 18, especially California, and found the country incredibly exciting. The scale, the wealth, the innovations, the enthusiasm for business, it all inspired me. I wanted to move there and build a huge business, and the go-getting, can-do attitude of American enterprise, as epitomised by The Magic of Thinking Big, impressed me enormously. And more than anything, entrepreneurs need confidence and role models. I found some of that through self-help books, in particular The Magic of Thinking Big. Perhaps I have rather philistine tastes, yet self-help guidance has a proud heritage, from the Bible to Marcus Aurelius's Stoic tome, Meditations. I think The Magic of Thinking Big is both basic but profound. Frequently it states the obvious, but frequent reminders are important. For example,
action cures fear. Isolate your fear and then take constructive action. Inaction, doing nothing about a situation, strengthens fear and destroys confidence.
After all, most of us know exquisitely well those defective aspects of our character we would like to correct, which is why we list them religiously as our New Year's resolutions, time after time. In the late 1980s, I took the plunge and left employment, partly inspired by The Magic of Thinking Big. I got involved in a series of ventures, building theatre sets, restoring classic cars, buying shareholder lists for direct mail. I spent every waking hour pursuing different schemes to kickstart my entrepreneurial career. All my initiatives were a struggle, but phrases from the book kept me going.
Keep your eyes focused on the big objective. Concentrate on the really important things.
I learned to prioritise and started to seize opportunities. Like all self-help books, its message is simple but not easy. To make your life better, you need to change. That means reforming one's behaviour, which takes willpower. For example, the author writes,
make a supreme effort to put only positive thoughts into your memory. Don't let negative, self-deprecatory thoughts grow into mental monsters. Simply refuse to recall unpleasant events or situations. Put people in proper perspective. Remember, people are more alike, much more alike, than they are different. Get a balanced view of the other fellow. He is just another human being. And develop an understanding attitude. Many bark, but it is a rare one that bites. Practice doing what your conscience tells you is right. This prevents a poisonous guilt complex from developing. Doing what is right is a very practical rule for success. Make everything about you say, I'm confident, really confident. Practice these little techniques in your day-to-day activities. A. Be a front-seater. B. Make eye contact. C. Walk 25% faster. D. Speak up. E. Smile big.
Certain well-educated people sneer at books like The Magic of Thinking Big. They think such titles sell false dreams and state the blindingly obvious. Moreover, often they worry that the underlying themes are too concentrated on material success. Some of the criticisms are valid, but I still think most of us need plain lessons and something uplifting. So why not dream of something better? For a few, a book like The Magic of Thinking Big might help inspire them to take risks, be bold, and act out their dreams. For much of the recession of the early 1990s, I lived off a growing overdraft. I was searching for a break, trying to think big. My big chance came in 1992, when I took control of Pizza Express with partners. The business then was much smaller than now, but still a great formula. We moved heaven and earth to clinch the deal, and in many ways succeeding helped transform my life. I was only 30 and had no assets to speak of, but perhaps some chutzpah. I probably followed the book's core message.
Believe it can be done. When you believe something can be done, your mind will find the ways to do it.
During my period as chairman, we grew the business enormously over 8 years to some 150 restaurants, and it provided the credibility and capital to build other companies like Strada, Patisserie Valerie, Giraffe and Gales. Now, the book is not specifically addressed to those who start a business, but I felt its words resonate. I still strongly believe in the recommendations in Chapter 10, Get the Action Habit.
Practice these key points. 1. Be an activationist. Be someone who does things. Be a doer, not a don'ter. 2. Expect future obstacles and difficulties and solve them as they arise. 3. Remember, ideas alone won't bring success. Ideas have value only when you act upon them. 4. Use action to cure fear and gain confidence. Do what you fear, and fear disappears. Just try and see. 5. Start your mental engine mechanically. Don't wait for the spirit to move you. Take action, dig in, and you move the spirit. 6. Think in terms of now. Tomorrow, next week, later, and similar words are synonymous with the failure word never. Be an I'm starting right now kind of person. 7. Get down to business pronto. Don't waste time getting ready to act. Start acting instead. 8. Seize the initiative. Be a crusader. Pick up the ball and run. Be a volunteer. Show that you have the ability and ambition to do. Get in gear and go.
In my experience, the entrepreneurs who succeed all have a sense of urgency. They do not procrastinate. They make decisions for a living and deal with problems as they arise rather than hiding from them. Even though many entrepreneurs may not have read this book, they have all followed its maxims. In a way, I think The Magic of Thinking Big has also helped me with my writing. For 15 years or so, first in the Sunday Telegraph and in recent years in the Financial Times, I've written a weekly essay about the ups and downs of an entrepreneurial life. Much of it is an attempt to offer tips to those running their own show or thinking of starting up a business. I consciously try to be positive and encouraging. I do not hide the realities. I often talk of failures, but I project the idea that entrepreneurs have the opportunity to control their own destiny and derive huge creative satisfaction from their work. The Magic of Thinking Big is written in an eminently accessible style. It uses short, active sentences. It is full of bullet points and bold subheadings. You do not have to read it at a sitting. You can dip in and out for a touch of motivation. There isn't really a sweeping narrative. Every chapter has a useful summary at the end. It is, perhaps, a book for those who don't necessarily read books very often. Its advice is straightforward, its anecdotes easy to understand. As it says at the front,
in every chapter of this book, you will find dozens of hard-headed, practical ideas, techniques, and principles that will enable you to harness the tremendous power of thinking big, so as to gain for yourself the success, happiness, and satisfaction you want so much.
It is not a text for the elite, but for every man. I, too, try to make my 700-word weekly newspaper column uncomplicated and even populist. If it is ever esoteric or obscure, it has failed. I also give lots of speeches, probably 50 a year, mostly to audiences of actual or would-be entrepreneurs. Again, the ideas in my talks reflect many of the themes in this book. For example, in Chapter 11, How to Turn Defeat into Victory, it says,
the difference between success and failure is found in one's attitude towards setbacks, handicaps, discouragements, and other disappointing situations.
My most popular speech is one where I detail my business struggles and mistakes and how I overcame them. It is frankly reassuring to hear that others have made errors and suffered disasters. Audiences do not want to hear a catalogue of amazing triumphs. That is conceited and quite possibly irrelevant to them. They need to know that you have endured difficulties and made losses and know what it is like to be in the trenches, fending off creditors, engaging in hand-to-hand combat with competitors, surviving against the odds thanks to perseverance, animal spirits and resilience. I recently launched a new think tank called the Centre for Entrepreneurs because I think such individuals need support and I want to research their psychology. Entrepreneurs matter because they create most of the new jobs, much of the industrial innovation, and a big part of the taxes and exports we need as a nation. I see a book like The Magic of Thinking Big as a sort of entrepreneur's manifesto. It states,
don't let tradition paralyze your mind. Be receptive to new ideas. Be experimental. Try new approaches.
That has been my approach to business and work. So often, those who do well with their own business are not the ones with formal qualifications, but those who possess boundless confidence, bulletproof ambition, strength of character, optimism, an ability to lead, and an overwhelming belief in progress. These are all qualities the Magic of Thinking Big tries to foster. And in its 1950s, homespun way, I think it makes a pretty decent job of it. And that is why it helped change me and in a way, help make me who I am, and why I've chosen it for this broadcast, ahead of hundreds of other, more sophisticated and scholarly books.
The Book That Changed Me was presented by Luke Johnson. The series was produced by Smita Patel.